Blog Talk Radio.
Started smoking when I was 13. I always thought when the time came, I could quit. No problem. Then at 28, I tried to go cold turkey and I found out how hard it really was. I made it all day without a smoke. Right until I met up with the guys. But I learned something that night. In fact, every time I tried to quit, there were more than a few, I learned a little more about what worked and what didn't work for me. And when I realized that I wasn't alone, that most people don't quit on their first or second attempt, I knew there was still hope. Today, I'm an ex-smoker. My only advice is to never, ever give up trying to quit.
If you're trying to quit smoking, the American Lung Association is here to help every step of the way. Visit quitterinyou.org for tools, tips, and stories from smokers we've helped to finally quit for good. The American Lung Association. We support the quitter in you at quitterinyou.org.
Quitterinyou.org. Remember that, those of you that are working, doing your best to quit, either cold turkey or just working really hard to gradually quit. Best wishes to you. My prayers are with you. And I love playing that PSA because you don't know who it influences and helps. And, of course, kicking off the show, Mars Mills, Round and Round. And remember to like his Facebook fan page because he has a big event coming up on the 25th. Visit rawartist.org and visit his Facebook page for more information. Mars is awesome to network with, and he's going to dig his shows. I haven't seen him live. I haven't seen him in person in ages. So you all go and tell them that, hey, Mars friend, Beth sent you, okay? But welcome to a special Sunday talk edition of the Shock Entertainment Reports. I am Beth, a.k.a. Be True. My apologies for the technical difficulty. It was unforeseen technical difficulty that I experienced last night. So my apologies, my deep in my heart apologies for that. Because, you know, I like to present a smooth show. It's live radio, but I like to present it to you smoothly and where we can interact, if not via phone, in the chat room and, you know, and also, you know, on Facebook and Instagram and other things. I'm on Instagram now. I've been on for a few weeks. So you all follow me at Instagram.com/ KULTRESHOKENT Beth, BETH. Okay? Really? Do that for me. Hey, right before the game, right before the show came on, I was peeping out the game. I was a little like, okay, what's going on when Tampa Bay was leading the Saints 14-0. But right before I came on the air, the score was 28-21 in the Who Dat Nation's favor. And also I was looking at the highlights doing the, you know, the show, you know, on Fox. And they were showing highlights from the Cowboys game. And the Cowboys were looking pretty good also against the Panthers, which is a team that I also like and admire. And, of course, everyone, all of you all know that I'm a big Cam Newton fan. But, of course, I'm a Dallas Cowboys fan, being a Dallas Cowboys fan since I was an itty-bitty girl. But pretty much today's show is just about catching up on things, on current news and so on. I was right before show at, when the show was coming on, I was checking out an article about the first picks have been published of Mr. and Mrs. Justin Timberlake. So congratulations to Mr. and Mrs. Justin Timberlake. So, wow, that is some great news for them. And for us, because I was fans of both of them before they got together. So, you know, that's an amazing thing. We have the presidential debate that's coming up tomorrow, and this will be the last debate during this presidential and also local and state political season. Because, you know, we have local elections and state elections, like many of you all here in Jackson, Mississippi, in the state of Mississippi. And so we have a big day coming up, November the 6th, and tomorrow is the last presidential debate. And are you all planning on watching it or not, or is your mind already made up? I mean, even those of us that have our minds made up, you know, we're watching it. And I was wondering how many of those voters that were in the part of the town hall meeting are now decided voters. Because I have seen a highlight on one network where a young lady still was undecided, even after being in the audience and even being one that was chosen to ask a question, that she still was undecided. But, you know, this is like a good close game, two good teams, because the president made good points and also former governor of Massachusetts, Mitt Romney, also make good points. So I can understand where people can be undecided. And I think it's good to know, even when you're a decided voter, it's good to be well-versed on the platform of both candidates, and plus the VP candidate and the vice president. It's important to know where they stand in regards to their platforms. It really, because when I was volunteering at the Mississippi GOP vendor booth at the Mississippi State Fair, big shout out to Mississippi Republican Party staff and those of us that volunteer. One thing I found out from talking to different people from different backgrounds, from people who are fans like I am of the president and the first family, but plan to vote for Romney, and I even met people who are fans of Romney. To be honest, I met Obama, people who plan to vote for Obama, but they like, that do like Romney. I did meet people and talk with people that had nothing bad to say about Romney. They like Romney. But yes, they're voting for Obama. So there are people out there that do that do like Romney and do like Paul Ryan. So I talk to people, you know, and people have no reason to be fake, you know, really. So, you know, we all have the right to hold our peace and not discuss politics or to discuss our thoughts regarding how we feel America, how the country should be. So, you know, yeah. I found my eating plan that I like. And because I have not been on, like, a diet, like a, you know, I have many diet books, and I've followed the teachings of many, from Jillian Michaels to Jorge Cruz to Ty Mock to Denise Austin. And, you know, I follow their teachings, but the eating plan that I have found that I think is meant for me is the ABS diet. You know, it just seems like it matches up to the needs that I need, and I'm very concerned and want my abs and my stomach back. But just reading over what the foods that are included in the abs diet, and I need to increase my HDL, my good fat, meaning I need to incorporate a lot of nuts and so on and lean meats into my diet. And just looking at the abs diet, it seems that it's congruent with the things that I need. And I've really been feeling good and energized in regards to the changes that I've made. I'm glad that my mindset, back to what we were talking about, the new year. And now it's time for a whole nother new year. I did stay committed to my New Year's resolutions of being focused on living a happier and healthier life. And finally, I don't think I'm going to get on a scale until my next month's doctor's appointment, annual physical exam next month. But I can see and feel the difference in my body. And, you know, recently my mother and I began digesting Apalea, and that's a really neat health wellness juice. I recommend it. I mean, you've probably seen it on your late night infomercials. Very cool. Barry, I have to get a few of the couple of the spokespeople on to talk with you all more about Napalea. And there are other products, too, that Napalea have. They have weight loss program. They have, replacement meals and bars and stuff like that also. But I'm on for that, talking on and on and on. And before I really get to talking,
me,
so
I started.
The PSA want to play again. I guess I'll play another song. You know, this today's show is only 30 to 45 minutes long. We'll resume to the longer broadcast later on this week. But tomorrow morning to Monday, today through Wednesday, or maybe today through Tuesday, maybe Wednesday, the shows will be 30 to 45 minutes long. So they'll resume back to the longer format before the end of the week. But what I was about to say before, really get into talking more about hot news, politics, and sports, and so on. I'm going to play a song by my, speaking of Dallas, by my friends, West Ford and the Foundry. and are climbing the music rock charts on ReverbNation.com. So check them out at Wes Ford and the Foundry at Reverb Nation, plus at SoundCloud, and most definitely like their Facebook fan page and like Culture Shock Entertainment Report's fan page also. Okay? Search Culture Shock Entertainment Report, KULTRE-SHOKENTREPORTZ. Big shout out to my friend DJ Slam in Sacktown. Miss you, DJ Slam, but I know you're doing big things in Sacktown too. So we've been chatting with him right when the show began on Facebook. So if you all need some, if you're in Sac area, you need an awesome DJ, music engineer, DJ Slam is the man's contact. Check him out on Facebook, Alex DJ Slam Chapman. Here's Wes Ford and the Foundry. What's up, Attorney Jay and Scott and Lori and Wes Ford and the Foundry? up, Dallas? Yeah, you all attending partying with Madonna tonight. She's back in full effect tonight, right? After last night's show was canceled due to her being sick. She had laryngitis, and Madonna had to cancel last night's show at American Airlines Center. But if I'm not mistaken, the show's still going on tonight. So those of you attending her show tonight, have fun for me, too, and party on and express yourself with the material girl herself. Right in Big D at the American Airlines Center. She's scheduled to perform at the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, home of the Saints, on Saturday the 27th. So that should be awesome. Yep. So if you're feeling better, Madonna. So I'm trying to look up some scores and also talk a little bit about the MLB. Even though this is not a sports show, this is just a catching up on news show. If today's your birthday, happy birthday. A lot of my friends are downtown celebrating my dear friend Brad Kamikaze Franklin's birthday at Jackson Dream, Dream Jackson, and this outdoor picnic. So they're grilling and having fun celebrating Kamikaze's birthday. So big shout out to he and his wife. And also happy birthday to George Harmon, another longtime friend of mine. Happy birthday, George. I've been meaning to send you a message on Facebook. So there are like birthdays everywhere. So just happy, happy birthday, everyone. And if you're celebrating anniversaries, that is cool, too. And if you're going through something that's not so hot, sending you hugs and kisses, okay? For real. And who else's birthday is it today that are celebrities? Today's George Randolph's birthday. Actress The Honeymooners. The actress My Honeymooners is still alive. She's 88. Wow. Happy birthday, George Randolph. Whitey Ford, Baseball Hall of Famer, 84. Manfred Mann, rock musician, 72. Steve Cropper, rock musician, Booker T and the MGs, 71. Oh, my God, I love that band. Evan Bishop, singer, 70. Judy Shenlin, Judy's birthday today. She's 70. Catherine Hardwick, director from Twilight, 57. Carrie Fisher, actress and Arthur, 56. Ken Watanabe, actor, 53. Melora Walters from Big Love, actress, 52. Jeremy Miller, actor, Growing Pains, 36. Michael McMillan, actor from True Blood, is 34. Willis McGahee, football player, 31. And who else's birthday is it today? None other than the one and only Kimmy, Kim K, Miss Kim Kardashian, significant other to Kanye West. Today is TV personality Kim Kardashian's 32nd birthday, and they're showing a beautiful picture of Kim in a red dress, courtesy of AP photo Dan Steinberg. Happy birthday, Kim. Hope all your wishes come true, all of you celebrating birthdays today. And I feel like I'm forgetting someone else, like in my personal life, too, whose birthday it is today. There are birthdays everywhere. And also today in 1879, Thomas Edison invented a workable electric light at his laboratory in Menlo Park, New Jersey. And 1797, the U.S. Navy frigate Constitution, also known as Old Ironsides, was launched in Boston Harbor. 1805, a British fleet commanded by Admiral Horatio Nelson defeated a French and Spanish fleet in the Battle of Trafalgar. Nelson was killed in the battle. 1917, American soldiers first saw action in World War I on the front lines in France. Oh, my God. And also today, I forgot someone. Israel. I knew I was forgetting someone. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is 63 today. Today is his 63rd birthday, so happy birthday. 1917, American soldiers first saw action in World War I on the front lines of France. 1967, tens of thousands of Vietnam War protesters marched in Washington, D.C. 71, President Richard M. Nixon nominated Louis F. Powell and William H. Rehnquist to the U.S. Supreme Court. And in 75, Boston Red Sox catcher Carlton Fisk hit a ball that struck the left field foul pole in Boston's Fenway Park for a home run, giving the Red Sox a 7-6 victory in 12 innings over the Cincinnati Reds in Game 6 of the World Series. And in 88, former Philippine President Ferdinand Marcos and his wife Imelda were indicted in New York on charges of fraud and racketeering. And also in 02, a car packed with explosives blew up next to a bus in northern Israel during rush hour. 14 people were killed in addition to two suicide attackers. And in 03, invoking a hastily passed law, Florida Governor Jeb Bush ordered a feeding tube reinserted into Terry Schiavo, a brain-damaged woman at the center of a bitter right-to-die battle. You all remember that? That was a battle right there, was it not? I know. Wow. So tomorrow we're talking, of course, we're going to talk entertainment and lifestyle news because that's the kind of show it is. But we're incorporating politics since the debate will be going on Monday night. But we're going to resume the continuation of looking at excerpts from the book journal Walk Off Weight, written by Prevention Fitness Director Michelle Stanton. And also I want to send a big thank you out to Mr. Neil Thacker again for his amazing appearance on the show on Monday. If you missed the show, you most definitely should listen to it. If you're interested, especially if you're interested in real estate investing on all ends, any ends, at least one end, but also you should most definitely check it out for reasons because Neil Thacker is such an inspiring and motivating individual business person. And it's because he's a successful real estate investor based in Chicago. He also helps and coaches entrepreneurs in different industries. And I thought he was only going to spend a few minutes with us, but he stayed the whole episode. Plus, we went overtime. Plus, we weren't ready to go when the show ended. And he will be returning in the near future a couple more times to discuss not only real estate investing and living a positive lifestyle, but also been a proponent of anti-piracy control and laws of protecting the intellectual property of those creative minds out there, you know, like you and I. So he will be returning back. And I have a new follower I see on Twitter. Big shout out to Jeremy Wilkins at Jeremy Wilkins, sports photographer, curator, blogger for CBS, Baltimore photographer specializing in sports. So big shout out to Jeremy Wilkins for following me via Twitter. My Twitter handles are at Beth Williams, at BETHWMS, at KULTRESHOKENT. And those of you that are all about Mark, guys, at Beth, BETH, Mark, MARKGRL. So again, thank you, Jeremy Wilkins, for following me. I look forward to networking with you effectively. That is neat of you. Let's see, I'm checking out New York Times headlines. Right now we have only about 60 seconds of live streaming, but I can continue the show on for roughly another 10. I have that extra time. So, again, I thank you for tuning in and supporting the show. So I'm checking out some headlines from the New York Times. There's a quotation of the day. Mayor Michael R. Bloomberg says, "You cannot balance the budget without raising revenue and cutting expenses." And that is a quote from the mayor of New York City, Michael R. Bloomberg, weighing in on the presidential race by finding fault with both candidates. He says, "You cannot balance the budget without raising revenue and cutting expenses." So that's the quotation of the day. And also, you know, I love checking out the headlines from other Washington Post in New York and San Francisco and different ones. So there are other headlines that says Romney's proposal for more military ships draws skepticism. A Romney stance causes turmoil of young immigrants. Romney Republicans began month with 34 million advantage bound shows. U.S. officials say Iran has agreed to nuclear talks. But President complex catalysts of race. I think this is the article that caught my attention. And I think this is the article I share. Excuse my pause, though. I'm waiting for the article to continue. Coming up on my T-Mobile, my touch. The president, a complex calculus of race and politics. And then they're showing a picture of the president in Iowa last week. As the nation's first black president, he has walked a careful line on the subject of race. And this article is published by Jody Cantor. And it reads, when President Obama greets African Americans who broke barriers, he almost invariably uses the same line. I wouldn't be here if it weren't for you. He said to Ruby Bridges Hall, who was the first black child to integrate in elementary school in the South. The president repeated the message to a group of Tuskegee Airmen, the first black aviators in the United States military, the Memphis sanitation workers, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. addressed in his final speech, and others who came to pay tribute to Mr. Obama and found him saluting them instead. The line is gracious but brief and guarded. Mr. Obama rarely dwells on race with his visitors, or nearly anyone else. In interviews with dozens of black advisors, friends, donors, allies, few said they had ever heard Mr. Obama muse on the experience of being the first black president of the United States, a role in which every day he renders what was once extraordinary almost ordinary. But his seeming ease belies the anxiety and emotion that advisors say he brings to his historic position. Pride in what he has accomplished, determination to acquit himself well, and intense frustration. Mr. Obama is balancing two deeply held impulses, a belief in universal politics, not based on race, and an embrace of black life and its challenges. Vigilant about not creating racial flashpoints, the president is private and wary on the subject, and his aides carefully orchestrate White House appearances by black luminaries and display of black culture. Those close to Mr. Obama say he grows irritated at being misunderstood, not just by opponents who insinuate that he caters to African Americans, but also by black lawmakers and intellectuals who fought him for not making his presidency an all-out assault on racial disparity. Tragically, it seems to be the president feels boxed in by his blackness. The radio and television host Tavis Smiley wrote in an email, "It has at times been painful to watch this particular president's calibrated, cautious, and sometimes callous treatment of his most loyal constituents with Izzy." He continued, adding that African Americans will have lost ground in the Obama era. Such criticism leaves the president feeling resentful and betrayed, aides said, by those who believe should be his allies. The accusations are an assault on his being, said David Axelrod, his chief strategist, not to mention a discomfiting twist in re-election fight in which the turnout of black voters who expressed overwhelmingly loyalty to the president but also some disappointment could sway the result. But like an actor originating a role on Broadway, Mr. Obama has been performing a part that no one else has ever played, and close observers say they can see him becoming as assured on race in public as he is in private conversation. In 2009, the new president's statement on the arrest of a black Harvard professor by a white police officer set off days of negative headlines. In 2012, he gave a commanding but tender lament over the killing of a black teenager, Trayvon Martin, by a white man. As he got more comfortable being president, he's gotten more comfortable being him, said Brian Mathis, an Obama fundraiser. As when they could sense that shift, several advisors and friends mentioned the wine and hours of Mr. Obama's birthday party in the summer of 2011. As the hour grew late, many of the white guests left, and the music grew blacker and blacker as the comedian Chris Rock later told an audience watching African American entertainers and sports stars do the Dougie to celebrate a black president in a house built by slaves. Mr. Rock said, "I felt like I died and went to black heaven." The president guest recalled, seemed free of calibration or inhibition. He danced with relative abandon. Other guests ribbing him about his moves. Everyone swam to Stevie Wonder under a portrait of George Washington. Trying to avoid a wedge in the White House, Mr. Obama has relied on a long-term strategy on race and politics, and he has been refining throughout his career. As far back as 1995, former colleagues at the University of Chicago remember him talking about moving away from the old politics of grievance and using common economic interests to bind diverse coalitions. He argued that if political action and political speeches are tailored solely to white audience, minorities will withdraw, such as whites often recoil when political action and speeches are targeted to racial minorities' audiences. Recall William Julius Wilson, now a sociologist at Harvard. Mr. Wilson had turned the world of social policy on his head by arguing that class is becoming more determinative than race in America, and pointing out that race-specific remedies were less politically feasible than economic policies that benefit a broad range of people. The young politician absorbed Mr. Wilson's ideas, which matched his own experience as a community organizer and a person whose own life did not fit neat racial categories. Mr. Obama now presides over a White House that constantly projects race, cross-racial unity. When discussing in interviews what image the Obamas want to project, aides use one word more than another, than any other. In concerts of Motown and civil rights era songs have been sought with musicians of many races and in introducing them. The president emphasizes how the melodies brought disparate Americans together. Though the Memphis sanitation workers were involved in a shattered movement of the civil rights struggle, Dr. King was assassinated after going to support their strike. They were invited to the White House for a labor event, not a race-oriented one. Many of the president's most critical domestic policy decisions have disproportionately benefited African Americans. Stimulus money that kept public sector workers employed, education grants that have underperforming schools, and a health care overall that will cover tens of millions of uninsured Americans, but invariably frames those as policies intended to help Americans of all backgrounds. If you really want to get something done, you can't put it in a way that will kill it before it's gone. Mr. Obama said in one meeting, according to Reverend Al Sharpton, "We have to deal with the specific problems of different groups, blacks, women, gays, lesbians, immigrants, in a way that doesn't allow people to put these wedges in." Mr. Sharpton recalled the president saying in another, "That approach, along with the memories of toxic campaign battles over Mr. Obama's former pastor, the Reverend Jeremiah A. Wright, Jr., has resulted in a White House that often appears to tiptoe around race." Deborah Lee, the chairman and CEO of Black Entertainment Television, requested interviews with the Obamas in 2009, but press aides told her that they did not want the first couple on BT in the first 6 months of the administration. She said in an interview that they appeared later. That's kind of odd, huh? Ended up very interesting. There was all this caution and concern because we were in the midst of a great American experiment, one former aide said. Another aide remembered palpable nervousness about the artwork of the Obamas chose for their private quarters in the White House, including some with race-specific messages. In private, White House aides frequently dissect the racial dynamics of the presidency, asking whether Representative Joe Wilson, Republican of South Carolina, would have yelled, "You lie," at a white president during an address to Congress, or what Tea Party posters saying take back our country really means. Michelle Obama often called the glue in her husband's relationship with black voters, sometimes remarks publicly or privately about the pressures of being the first black lady. Her husband is more circumspect, particularly on the question of whether some of his opposition is fueled by race. Abe said the president is well aware that some voters say they will never be comfortable with him, as well as the occasional flashes of racism on the campaign trail, such as putting his wife back in the White House. Oh, my God, that's sad. To T-shirt, I never heard of that T-shirt, T-shirt spotted at a recent Mitt Romney rally. But they also say he is disciplined about not reacting because doing so could easily backfire. So it's important to be a gracious person, period, anyway. So he's a gracious person, a gracious president also. So, you know, graciousness goes a long way, period. A lot of people, probably including I, should practice more graciousness. The president knows that some people may choose to be divided by differences, race, gender, religion, but it focuses on bringing people together, Valerie Jarrett, a senior advisor, wrote in an email. Even when Newt Gingrich called him a food stamp president during the Republican primaries, the most president did was shoot confidence a meaningful look. The way he would cock his head and exaggerate a smile like, I'm not saying, but I'm saying, one campaign advisor said. The blacks are accused him of not being aggressive on race. Mr. Obama has replied, I'm not the president of black America, he said. I'm the president of the United States of America, which is true. But, you know, we do hear that many prominent blacks do speak that, hey, seem like some groups get maybe more attention than some that happens to be of black persuasion. I am not an expert at this, even though I am black, but with mixed roots. But I really did not learn a lot about the reality of the separation of black America and white America until the early 90s, late 90s, mid-90s, early 90s, when I was, when my love interest and my mentor, my friend, the late Reverend Charles Williams, who was then the president and longtime president of the Indiana Black Expo, I then began to really open my eyes in regards to that as I have grown up in the state of Mississippi, so, you know, a lot of my teens and 20s were spent in Dallas, Texas, but I always looked at the world in a multicultural way that is blended. But in the 90s, I found out that there really are black Americas and white Americas and Hispanic Americas and, you know, but especially black America, white America. I mean, and I was just, my goodness, like, what? You know, even though I grew up in Mississippi, I remember I was born after the Civil Rights Movement. So I've always had a multicultural and a mixed, it's a multicultural upbringing, you know, in school, work, just growing up. So you know, I don't know. And believe me not, one reason, this is an interesting article, and there are a lot of Americans who happen to be black, African-American, who can relate to this, and if the president feels this way also, that are from different, from all sides, from all parties. I mean, we can relate to that, you know. We can relate to what's been said. That statement makes me want to vomit, Cornel West, someone whom I know that I originally met in 97 when I was videotaping an event. Cornel West, an activist and Union Theological Seminary professor, said in an interview, did you say that to the Business Roundtable? He asked rhetorically, do you say that to IPOC? He said, referring to a pro-Israel lobbying group. Members of the Congressional Black Caucus, with whom the president has a contentious relationship, have echoed the charges that Mr. Obama is insufficiently attentive to African Americans, even threatening at times to sandbag his agenda. Even some of Mr. Obama's black supporters privately expressed the same anxiety in more muted form. At the first meeting of his top campaign donors last year, some black donors were dismayed when officials handed out cards with talking points on the administration's achievements for various groups, women, Jews, gays, lesbians, and there were no cards for African Americans. The accusation that Mr. Obama does not care about black suffering appears to carry little weight with the African American public, and yet it tears at the president, the AIDS friends and supporters. At the 2010 speech at the National Urban League, he approached Mr. West. He just came at me tooth and nail, Mr. West said. Are you saying I'm not a progressive? Mr. West recalled the president asking. Melanie Hampton, an Obama fundraiser, explained why the accusation was painful. you expect your family to see you the benefit of the doubt, he said. So you can read the rest of this article, and I'm getting ready to post it on Facebook and Twitter, but time has run out for this broadcast. And I have been